All right. Well, I guess we don't do it then.
Yeah. All right. We will now call to order the City Council work session for Tuesday, June 24th, 2025. Topics of discussion, number one, review gravel road elimination program funding options. Turn it over to city staff.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members. I'm just going to share my screen. This is a map. This was attached to your case. This is a little cleaner version. You can actually see the dollar amounts easier on this one. But these are the six road segments that the case is really in regards to tonight. Public Works Committee has been talking about the Gravel Road Elimination Program, or GREP, since about 2004, actually a little earlier than that even, so over 20 years. Back then, there were about 12 miles of gravel roads. Since then, we've converted about 85% of them to paved roads, so we're down to just under 2 miles of roads left. It's these segments shown on your screen. The dollar amounts that are shown with each of them were based on a recent geotechnical report that we completed. So we went out and collected soil borings along each of these road segments, used those to come up with pretty good estimated costs and quantities. So subgrade corrections were needed on a few, but really we used those geotechnical reports and the pavement recommendations within them to come up with the estimated costs shown on your screen. So we feel very confident with those costs. Over the years, we've actually studied a couple of these segments independently, and the costs that are shown on your screen, we've compared them to the costs that we've developed over the years on the other segments, and we feel very comfortable with these numbers. So I just wanted you to know that we have really cross-checked these numbers and verified them. Really, where we're at right now is we have these roads identified. Staff has prioritized them, how we would recommend tackling them if we were to bite them off one at a time. So I can address that if you'd like me to. That's not in the case, but we're currently working on the regular pavement management program projects. Working on the 2026 project, so we're really, engineering is pretty busy. So what the point I'd like to get across is, if you wanted to move forward on these, having one ready for construction in 2026, that would be a staff produced set of plans, would be pretty tough at this point for us to get that done. 27, I think we could definitely get at least one of these done in-house, the design and getting it bid in-house, but 26 would be pretty tough. Doing them all at once would be probably impossible to do that in-house. We would have to contract that work out. So I guess, you know, have staff's recommendation would be to try and bite them off one at a time over the years. Again, we've taken care of over 10 miles of them in the last 20 years, either through development projects or just one-offs with other street reconstruction projects nearby. So that's just really a high-level overview, but these are the street segments, those are the costs, and they're attached to your case with some information on the finances. We have the information on the TIF boundaries that's attached to your case. Two of these projects are within TIF 1. Those would be the areas F and E, south of Alpine Drive. So those are within the TIF, but Diana can address the availability of those funds in some detail when we get into the discussion on the funding. But really at this point in time, I think right now the Public Works Committee has talked about the different funding sources. There wasn't a lot of consensus behind instituting assessments, using assessments. There wasn't a lot of support for that. And bonds, there was different opinions on the Public Works Committee on whether bonds would be a viable funding option or a good, reasonable funding option for these, converting these roads to paved roads. The last thing I just want to point out is that we do maintain these roads using a grader, a road grader. It's a 1999 John Deere. It's pretty old. We are still able to get parts for it. It runs pretty well. We've been, you know, it's in the shop several times a year for repairs. But, you know, we have been able to maintain it this far. It's not in the CIP. It is a pretty costly piece of equipment if we were to go out and buy a new one. You're on the order of about $400,000 for a new one. So we took it out of the CIP a while ago with the understanding that we try and work through this program and get rid of these gravel roads. So I guess those are all the pieces of the puzzle and a real high-level explanation. So, Brian, I'm not sure if you want to add anything.
Just kind of to add a little bit to staff being able to prepare these in-house. As we come into our budget season next year, you'll see an increase to engineering staff and a decrease, ultimately, or the goal is decreasing consulted or contracted design work and inspection work. So that just kind of correlates with what we think that we can handle as we propose to increase Ramsey staff and decrease contractor work. Not saying we can't continue contract work, but that kind of goes to the, we're hoping to get to a point where everything is getting done in-house unless it's a really big project.
Questions? Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm curious how much wood to add if we had, you know, if we try to do it for 2026, we had to outsource.
Roughly, what's contracted
for the engineering? Typically, it's around 10% of the project costs, give or take.
Is that both design and inspection?
Design is typically around 8.5% or so. Inspection around 2%. So, yeah, design and inspection.
You know, I don't know if you said this or not, but which ones were you recommending we do first?
So staff's recommendation would be to, so based on the number of calls we receive each year, the number of trips we make out to each site, the distance of the segment from Public Works, so the time it takes to travel there and then the wear and tear on the equipment, our recommendation would be to start with A. We would then proceed to F, so the lower left, so Collins and Beatty. Then E would be our third highest priority, 148th, south of the elementary school. Then D, that's Potassium Street. Then we would move to C, 158th, which is between Berry Light and Armstrong, right in the middle. And then back up to B, Garnett Street.
Yeah.
And that's just based on number of calls and the maintenance that we have to perform each year.
Sure.
I'm wondering how many people are contacting you and what their issue is with it. What are like the benefits of making these roads paved versus having them still be dirt? And if we're fixing these, what can we not fix later on because we've decided to prioritize these, even though it's not necessarily a priority of yours right now?
Good questions. So as far as the calls that we're receiving, it's primarily regarding the gravel roads. They'll get washboardy, so, and then potholes. Some of them develop potholes based on the use and the vehicles using them. But really it's about getting rid of the washboard and going out and grading them. We have a couple of these roads. We have a couple of them that have people with old collector cars, sports cars that are pretty low to the ground, and they don't like to take their expensive collector cars on the gravel road. So they call us quite often and ask us to come out and grade. We don't get a lot of complaints on dust so much, which surprises me a little bit, but dust does not seem to be a complaint as much as just the ride of the road and the vehicles that the people are driving in. They don't like that. As far as what couldn't we do, I guess it would depend on how many of the segments you'd like to see paved and how quickly. If it's one-off projects, one every 2-3 years, it probably would not impact our ability to deliver on the pavement management program projects as much as if we wanted to do them all in 1 year. It would really prevent us from getting around to a lot of the reconstruction overlays that year.
And then did you say what the average call volume is every year?
So I'll start with Area A. Area A we receive the most calls on. We will get calls on that we'll get a call typically every 2 to 3 weeks for someone to pick up. And then we typically then wait till it rains. It's much easier to work the gravel after it rains, so we'll wait for it to rain. Then we'll go out and work the gravel, get it smoothed out, try and restore the crown as best we can so that the water runs off when it rains and doesn't sit there. That just tends to create more washboarding and potholes. So, Area A is every 2 to 3 weeks. We're probably making a run out there. Area F, it's generally twice a month, somewhere in that order. And then Area E, we're out there probably once every month or so. And the other areas are on a random basis.
Shannon?
Thanks. For Area A and F, since those seem to be our hot topics, how many houses are on Area A, and is well and septic already, is that private well and septic, or is that city sewer and water?
So if I can take the latter first, yes, it's all well and septic.
Okay.
And as far as the number of houses, I don't have the exact number off the top of my head. It's not a lot. It's probably somewhere on the order of 8 or 9 homes along that stretch. Not so much along Xenolith as you're driving to the south, but then when you get up to the cul-de-sac roads, and the homes are along that south side.
Chan?
Sorry. Since we're talking well and septic, and it's private, are we anticipating putting in city sewer and water anytime soon? Because my fear is we pave it, and then we got to tear up that road and put city sewer in.
Yeah, city sewer and water, nowhere near there.
Nowhere near there? Okay.
Take a lot to connect all the way up there.
Area D is in the Musa. Is that correct? Is it our road? Is it a private road area?
D and C, we have sewer and water.
Sewer water
somewhat nearby. We actually have water main that runs.
But is it in the Musa?
Is it in the Musa? I don't think it is. I think you're right. That Area E is the only one in.
Michael.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This priority sequence you're talking about, how well does that correlate with other road projects you'd have people in the area?
There is no correlation. We didn't see if that would time well with that or anything, so we haven't looked at that yet.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Murray. Yeah, thank you for bringing this up. I guess, as you probably heard from me complaining about this for a long time, because I hear from residents, being in Ward 3, hear a lot from the Collins and the Beatty people. Driving out there with them, I've experienced where it's hard to accelerate on Highway 10 because you got the gravel. The sides kind of fall into on that exit from Beatty to 10, and as you're driving through dust, you hear the rocks just nailing your cars, and I actually just have a voicemail too. I'm just going to send to Brian that I can have him send out from residents asking when we're going to get that paved. It's one of the top issues I hear in that area. I hear it, probably every other week people complaining about it. So I'm excited to get that done. I do just about anything we need to do to get that done as quick as possible for that area.
Who's going
to
call you then?
Well, I'm trusting you. You got some other ones, buddy. So, but I'll just say that's the feedback I've heard, and I'm really excited to get that done. And there's even school buses that stop there that have issues, and it's just to be good to get that paved and good for the residents.
Kirsten.
So if I'm hearing this correctly, you get about 24 calls for Area F from 8 to 9 constituents. Is that something that if you
F
got...
is a lot more than 8 or 9.
He said there was 8 or 9 homes on that area.
Not an F.
We started with A. He never finished his
F
question.
Is a lot of
he didn't
people.
Finish.
Okay, so A is 8 to 9 homes. Every 2 to 3 weeks, about 24 calls. How would that compare to the other roads that we were hearing complaints about before? that we make priority.
Can I ask for clarification when you say the other roads that we're hearing?
Back when we were like prioritizing like just fixing roads generally, the current infrastructure that we actually have, how many folks on an like average were you getting a call from a stretch of road before? Like, what is the level of impact that this would have actually? If it's 8 to 9 homes and you're getting 24 calls from the same 8 to 9 people, what impact is that actually going to have versus, like you said, if we are prioritizing our already, you know, built an infrastructure, like that kind of thing? Like, I just want to make sure that we're making, like, the one every 2 to 3 years makes sense if it's not going to impact what we have already going on. But it doesn't necessarily make sense to try and throw them all in 2026, right?
So if I'm understanding, so the, you know, back when I first started here in 2013, and the roads were all in really poor shape, potholes, and I mean, we were getting calls all the time from folks for to come out and repair the roads. So we're at a really good place now in regards to calls on bituminous roads, on paved roads. We are receiving very few calls of requests and calls of concern at this point in time. So we probably receive more right now on these gravel roads than we do on the rest of all the main roads combined at this point in time. That's kind of the short answer, I guess.
I think it's also important to note that these are residents that paid, I assume, the same taxes as everybody else for roads / services that are less than everybody else. So though it may not be the highest priority, we do have to be fiscally responsible. We also have to take in consideration that residents pay into the system and are should be afforded the same roads as their neighbors that have them. Other thoughts?
Your hand on that.
Jen.
Yep. Because if F has ability, I believe you said F has ability to tie into city sewer and water, correct?
Yes.
F.
I pulled up our MUSA boundary and F is within it, E is within it, D is within it, and B is within it. The likeliness of any of them redeveloping into water and sewer is probably on the lower end, with the exception of area D. I think because it's generally vacant land, we've had some conversations with developers on that one, but like E and F, I don't see a developer coming in and buying out dozen plus homes to bring water and sewer in and get smaller lots. And area or B up on the north end, that's not likely either. It's likely that it would go, water and sewer would go past that road, but
your hand up.
I did, and then I lost my question.
So. Kirsten, come back to you, Shannon.
Would we be able to send out a letter to the homes on these dirt roads to ask what their priority would be to have these fixed if we were to assess them?
Good question.
Because it may look different if we were asking them to pay into it versus the city doing it 100%.
Dan.
Okay, answer
the
question. Sorry. Yeah, I think
I don't know if that was a question. It was for, I mean, staff could do anything that council would ask us to do, but
I think that's kind of the first question that council needs to determine is, are these being assessed moving forward? Currently, the policy says yes. There's some feeling of no. So once that's determined, then I think, do we follow up with a questionnaire on true desire, depending on whether they're paying in or not? Yeah, that's a logical next step.
Dan and then Chris.
Yeah, so I think, and keep in mind, I think it is in the city's best interest to get, at some point, rid of our, you know, roads, our gravel roads, you know, for both the equipment that, you know, the fewer we have, the longer it's going to last, and just for maintenance, still flying, things like that, make it easier to, you know, have them all the same type. When it comes to the assessment, I mean, like you mentioned, these residents pay in for all the other, you know, bituminous payment throughout the city because it's coming out of general budget. I don't think they should be treated any differently when we have to pave their area. I don't think we should do special assessments for that at all. We've also learned historically that the special assessment process is very cumbersome. They can appeal. It's costly. That's why we decided to move from it to different ways to pay for our pavement management. It's not an efficient or good way to handle, you know, at least at the time, that's what we were told to handle, you know, bringing in money. So I don't think they should be treated different than anyone else. That I think they should, it should come out of the same general fund because it is in the best interest of the city.
Chris, and then Kirsten.
So when we had previously talked about assessments, these places here, never the developer or the people who live there paid for paved roads. So everybody that has paved roads, one way or another, paid for the roads, either through assessments or through the developer that charged them back. So in some way, these people haven't paid for roads. So in that way, I do agree with it. However, when we've looked into it, with the small number of houses, we're not able to assess a lot. So the question is the juice worth the squeeze? Mm-hmm. And I'm concerned that we would have to, the little amount that we would charge.
It's like shaving the beach.
Kind of. I mean, it's just, it. On one way, I think it is important to consider it, but I think pretty easily, I think we would come up with an idea that it doesn't necessarily, it's not cost efficient.
Can I add a comment? So the last gravel road that I remember that we did was Ute Street, and we did assess that one. So that's the last recollection I have of the whole gravel roads, because we have not done one in a long time.
Do you remember the percentage by chance?
No, I do not.
Oh, is that when we were doing it overall, though, for all roads? At that point still?
It was before the pavement management policy, of course, because that was in regards to the reconstruction and having a mechanism in place. But I think it still followed the 50% assessment back at that time. And it goes back several years because actually I think Councilmember Elbig was on the council. So that kind of tells you how long ago it was.
Just Lund dropping her historical, dropping her historical knowledge. Kirsten, and then Shannon, and I have something to say.
Okay, so first I want to, like, dispel this thing that we don't care about these people just because we're not paving their road. It's what's the best for most, right? And we already have something going on in order to prioritize the infrastructure of the road systems that we have currently. And so we need to work these roads into that system and that structure without putting the other ones behind. And we did just establish that historically there has been assessment, right? And that's our current scheme is to assess, and that, as Chris stated, people pay for their roads that have been paved historically, so it makes sense. City staff can speak to how much effort and work and its worthiness if we assess, but I think that we should start where we typically are originally at, which is assessment. I think that's what makes the most sense. I don't think it's a no that we pave these roads. I just think it's a when and how.
Shanna.
Just for clarification, we're doing just 2027 A, and then 28 maybe B, or no, F, and then, or are you looking for direction on how
fast
to do these?
Okay. We're deciding that.
I'm not even sure. He's like, A and F, and then I'm like, okay, when? I'd have to mirror what Kirsten was saying here, because everybody's paid in, and if you did the math at the low end for eight people, I mean, that's only a $33,000 $750 assessment for them to pay off over years. And if they're the ones that are calling because their collector cars are being beat up going down these roads, I think the likelihood that they're going to be like, yes, I want this that bad, thankfully I don't have to pay the whole $540,000. So I'd be on board with an assessment.
I moved into my house in 2019, and I did not pay an assessment on my house. And my house will have its roads redone. and I will not pay an assessment because I'm paying extra taxes. So I think it's important to know if we're going to go down that route, we could play hypotheticals and say somebody could have moved in the last 4 years and never paid an assessment. Should they have to when I haven't had one? I think the assessment, from what we're seeing here, how it's built into the gravel roads, that policy, was that created before we overhauled how we do roads in general?
I believe it was 2014, if I remember, December of 2014.
So we're using a policy that was created during a time when assessments was used across the board for everybody. It still says that, not because it's the right thing to do or because it fits the general theme of the council moving forward. It says that because we haven't addressed it since we changed how we assess roads. So I also think because a policy from 2014 that is a small sliver of a much larger picture that we changed, saying because it says it in 2014, shame on us as a council for not going back and revising anything that has to do with roads and assessments. I think we missed out on that on our spot when I was on the council. So I think saying, well, the document from 2014 says it, so we have to stick with it, I think is not necessarily something I agree with. And I think the idea, and I don't think anybody's throwing any shade at anybody saying that nobody cares about their feelings. So I want to say that. And I will say that we don't do things as a government, whether it's federal, state, or local, for what's best for the needs of the most people. We protect the rights of individuals, and we need to look at this as due process and equal protection. And as I said before, if somebody's paying into the system and we're not affording them the same services, it's not a question of, well, if it doesn't benefit everybody, we don't do it. Our legal system is set up that we protect the individual, we work for the individual. So I don't, I guess, necessarily agree that we prioritize the many over the few, is where I'm standing at. We can do a couple more comments or a bunch more, but we should probably decide on the assessment part and then move forward for recommendation. Dan and then Kirsten.
Yeah, thank you. We come from a little bit of historical background in that, we had to sit through all these kind of heated meetings about, hearing residents of what the best way to fund the roads, and one side had one good policy, one other side another good policy, and we kind of decided between those two. But it was one thing that was universal at that time was no one wanted assessments. Every single resident we did, I don't recall one that wanted it. And even among the council members, that's the one thing that one person wanted this fee, one person wanted, the taxes. And one thing I don't think any of us wanted was the special assessment, just hearing the process and, the amount of people that fight it and how long it takes and, the fairness of it and on. So that, I guess going through that debate and hearing people, like Ryan mentioned, this is all prior to that, kind of this shift of how we fund things. And then also the last gravel road done was, way before this policy changed as well. I think we, any road that's being redone now, is whether it's paved or unpaved, I think should fall under the same policy of our budget. So,
Kirsten?
Should we look at the policy instead of this then first? There's greater concern about the policy, then maybe that's something we should start with versus actually just diving into the roads being paved.
I don't think there's enough of greater concern.
Policy is attached to the case, so it is part of the case.
Well, so I'm saying, should we make a decision on if we want to change the policy, and then from there, that the question would be answered to assess or not to assess?
Yeah, so like I stated, we should determine to assess or not to assess before we move on to direction for the city staff. And I assume that meant to determine if we're going to assess or not directly has to do with the policy.
But it doesn't mean that we're changing the policy just because we say yes or no this time. That's what I'm saying.
Well, we wouldn't have any gravels of roads left, so this policy would sunset based on the discussions that we have today.
Here, I would say if council's direction is to move forward without assessing to pave these gravel roads, staff would come back and or review this policy and come back with the necessary changes to match that direction. I don't know, does this address more than just paving gravel roads?
The assessment policy?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's still a relative policy, it just would have to be updated to match this direction.
Yes. Yeah. So, Anybody else have any strong opinions on assessment or arguments to make for or against them? If not, we can just go around and gauge the room since we don't vote at a work session. Chris, assess or not assess? That is the question.
I would want to consider it. So, okay, because without that, we don't have the dedicated funding source or an identified funding source.
Okay. Kirsten?
Assess.
Dan?
Not assess.
Shannon?
Assess.
Along Chris's lines, I want to see what it looks like.
Not assess. Or not, wait.
Wait, and see. I want to see in front of me what it looks like.
Not.
I am a not, so we have three nots, two maybes, and one, two no's, two maybes, three nots. How does that work? I believe we do not have consensus.
I would say
in any direction.
I guess Councilman Riley and Peters, what information would you need to see to kind of come to a final conclusion on your desire?
I want to see where the money, how it looks, which way we go.
Do we want to kind of talk, shift gears and talk about fund balances and where it might come from?
I think that's necessary.
And we can assess where we're at on the assessment.
I think we'll have to also, obviously, I think you're already going to do this, but we'll want to see what contributions the assessments would make to the total overall project to see if the juice is worth the squeeze.
I think it's 50%, right? Or does it follow the 429 and established value? And
so can I just give the...
Please do.
Yeah.
Okay, so... I don't know how many of you read this policy. It's fairly lengthy, but basically there is certain criteria that have to be satisfied to use this. The main criteria on here is that I would say the amount of the assessment must not exceed the special benefit to the property. So there has to be a benefit to the property to assess the road. Paving the road would be a benefit. The amount of the assessment cannot exceed that special benefit. And the assessment must be uniform in relation to the same class of property within the assessed area. Generally, what I would, if I could just state high level, in the past, I mean, all of our assessments were less than $10,000 per project, per parcel. So it would likely be on the order of something less than $10,000 per parcel that you would be able to assess. The other item that's in here, there is a clause in here that says subgrade corrections are not assessable. So we would have to pull some of these project costs, include costs for subgrade corrections, because there's poor subgrade soils. So those costs we'd have to pull out of each of the project area costs. So we'd be reducing by that amount, and then we could then go around and complete the computation for what the assessment amount could be, but I would say you're going to be significantly less than $10,000 per parcel, probably closer to somewhere in the order of $6,000 to $8,000 per parcel max. And even at that, you're probably going to have some people that will petition against it.
Bruce, have you ever done a property value assessment, kind of a pre-project to come up with a general idea?
We've done that with our, we did that with our projects while we were going through the assessment process. We ended up using special assessment benefit appraisals, so hiring an appraiser to not appraise each property, but to do just a global project report, basically. That gave you a range of realistic assessments that would likely hold up in court.
So, we can still go into the overall, how does the city fund this up front? Because ultimately, you're likely not going to get all of the properties to pay their assessment up front. Maybe that's part of the steps, so, and correct me if this is a terrible idea, but maybe we go and okay, a couple of these are our first priority projects. We can order those special assessment appraisal, come back and gauge that against the overall project cost, those appraisals are probably relatively inexpensive in the grand scheme of things.
I think it was, if I remember right, the last one we did, I think, was on the order of about $15,000.
They were from 2015 to 2019.
So okay.
So it was five figures.
Okay. Or we could go off of the roughly $8,000 a parcel and break down our math that way. And
is there, so area A, $540,000. Looking at Google Maps, maybe it might be one. When I zoom in, I only see one address, but it could be three, depending on where I'm seeing.
More than that. Yeah, but down there was.
It's one. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13.
Nope.
12. I think one goes up to a different map first.
Wait, what is that one? Xenia?
That's, this.
Yeah, okay, never mind. I was looking at the wrong one. Well, that point is a little more moved, but area B is what, two houses or three houses?
Yeah, that's pretty low.
So you're looking at $18,000 a house if we did 50%. So obviously you're saying we don't go up to 50%. But anyway, I don't know if that... I'm rambling out loud here. Just if we're not doing 50%, it's not so important. But I guess is the juice worth the squeeze? Shanna, and then back to Dan. Oh, you didn't hear that. Dan?
No, sorry.
And I definitely agree with, spread them out. I'm not saying we need to get the, whole $2.2 million all at once. I think we, spread them out, and every area we can do is going to be less wear and tear on the grader and things. Obviously, my opinion on the assessment hasn't changed. I don't think it's necessarily things in the city's best interest and the residents to, get those changed.
Any further direction from Chris and Eric about what you want to see?
I've seen assessments go the wrong way. My hometown, they did assessments, they did wheelage taxes, they did apron fees, they did every sort of way to do it just to get people to pay and come up with a reason for them to pay. I don't like these type of fees because, like you said, somebody could be living there for a year, could be a retiree. And also, they got a $7,000 bill they need now. So I don't like those assessments. I just wanted to understand how we're going to get that money, what that money would be, and could they pay it back over a series of years? But we want that money up front, right?
If they have the choice.
Yeah.
They could pay it up front, save some interest.
Or 10 years, right? Or so we spread it out over 10 years.
Yeah. Does that change your viewpoint on anything, or are you still on CDA?
I really don't like those. I just wanted to get a better understanding, I guess.
Do you have a better understanding now, or should we bring it back?
I'm fine.
So, pro-assessment or anti-assessment?
Anti-assessment.
Okay. There's four no assessments. All right. We have consensus not to assess. Continuing on, we need to provide a consensus on direction for staff to explore the following funding sources to fund the GREP projects. And to present the information in future council work sessions. That blank, can you help us fill in that blank? What are you looking for? We need to provide consensus on directions, where to follow up, funding sources. What does that look like?
Maybe Diana can go through the funding sources and status of them,
sure.
Future outlook.
Sure. So the three funding sources that I attached were TIF 1, TIF 2, and the PIR fund. So when you look at the map that he had provided, so anything that's south of Alpine Drive is in our development district. So basically all our TIF districts that we have are within the development district. Our TIF 1 and TIF 2, when they were established, they were prior to, I believe, 1990. They did not have pooling restrictions. So you can spend outside of the TIF district itself, but within the development district. And so that's why we've kept those in place, because you can continually spend as long as you keep the balance going. So the ones that are in the TIF district is the Area F and Area E.
which is a total of $710,000. So if you look at TIF 1 and TIF 2, there currently is, and I'm going to go and look at the end of 2026, because in as part of the cash flows when I did this, I looked at our payment management program projects also that were in our CIP, and I asked our assistant city engineer, Joe, which projects actually fell within this development district area that would be TIF eligible, and those are the ones that are noted on here. So that CIP is just a snapshot in time of what roads were included at that time. Not to say that there couldn't be more roads that fall within this when he continues on doing the CIP or looks at it for this year. But this is just based off of our 25 to 34 CIP. So I'm going to look then at the 26 balance. So in TIF 1, there is $516,000 roughly. And then under TIF 2 is $1,896,000. But if you look at the very bottom, you're going to see a bunch of these internal loans and payback administrative core and FNC development fee loan. This is that whole thing in regards to TIF 14 and paying back ourselves for the 2010 earlier that we actually were allowed to do. And we just got the special legislation, what, 2 weeks ago in regards to our remaining balance. So this would be, if you want to still follow the way the policy was kind of written or that we just have used in regards to the 2010 prior, we're just doing a percentage to like pay ourselves back, but we could also use now these other funds and to pay back the funds that are not as restrictive. So I know I'm not making much sense, but TIF is restrictive. You have to use it for the roads within these areas. You have to use it for infrastructure improvements, roads, that sort of thing. If you were to pay back the other funds, like say the PIR fund, equipment revolving fund, any of those other funds, then that is kind of your call of how you want to spend them. So there's no restrictions on them. So the TIF payback that we have, you have to make the determination of which funds you want to pay back and which ones are first. I'm just kind of paying back the TIF ones right now, but you may not want to pay back the TIF ones to see the budget and that stuff coming forward and future years. So for me to say that, you know, that's the true balance that's in the TIF 2 right now, that is your call if you want to keep those. If you follow along, like if you look at the internal rail stop, that one is not coming on to pay back anytime soon because that is actually one that was an after 2010. But if you see a decreasing balance under the respective years starting in like 2021, those loans are currently being paid back. And so that is funds that if you do not want it to go towards paying the TIF back, we could pay back our other funds also because there's nothing restricting us that you have to use these TIF. And I know I'm not making a, probably a bunch of sense because it's a lot of numbers and that, but I think if council direction is that this is where you want to fund those road improvements, this would be where you would take it from for that area for ENF and then just say, hey, I want to continue on with this kind of internal loan payment schedule back. And I'll keep them on and then look at the other funds.
And you're talking about page 2 at the bottom.
Three.
Above, 2 above the lowest highlighted area where it says internal loan road rail stop.
Yes.
And internal loans, core roads. And that's the diminishing columns you're talking about.
Yes. Those are the ones that this is coming from TIF 14 to pay back. As we get increment to pay back these amounts. And so there's loans basically out in several of our funds because we have about $30 million that have come from our funds that have basically gone into this TIF 14 area. So this is just the ones that are related to TIF 1 and TIF 2.
So what's our current loan balance to do the TIF area? You said
$500,000. Current loan.
Fund balance, you mean?
Yeah.
2026, year end 2026. It's projected to be $516,000.
Yeah, for under TIF 1. That is actually the cash balance, because if you look up above where it says the fund balance for 26, you see $3 million. That just means that those loans have been booked against it to pay back. So you have to look at the cash on hand that you have. So that's the bottom number of the 500.
So we have $516,202 for
under,
roads.
Under TIF 1.
Under TIF 1 that we could use for a third of this project, or a fourth of this project.
For the $710,000. So it would be basically a third of the project. And that, because you can use TIF 1 and TIF 2 because they are within the development district area for segments F and E.
So we have money to do some of the roads.
Yes, for those two segments.
Right, E and F, that's the bottom line. There's money available in the TIF districts to pay for E and F.
Yeah.
And so then if you're looking at the other segments, the pavement management fund, I didn't include that cash flow on the in your attachment for your case, because that kind has always been designated to go towards the road reconstructions and the overlay. That was what that fund was established for back when we had pulled back the franchise fee and then put it out for the property tax. So that was why I didn't include it.
Yeah.
And so our main fund then that we have that we've always used like to fund road improvements or like the sound wall and those sort of things, those odd things that come up, is our PIR fund. And so that was the fund when we used to do assessments. This was where the fund that collected it, the assessments. And so the balance as of, again, I'm going to, as of right now, you'll see if you go to the very bottom, there's just one $175,000 loan that's out there, and that is just 2010 and earlier. I have not booked anything that's after that, because that's just in the last couple of weeks, but there is a lot of funding that had originally come from the PIR fund that was funding this TIF area or this core area. So, in regards to the present value that we have today, we're looking at about $3,354,000. But if you note, our last project in the CIP ends like in 26, and so it's hard to say. I think at the time, and maybe Bruce can add in on this is kind of the fund that we have when road projects or situations happen that they're not in the CIP and we need funding, because this is our one fund that we have. I don't know if Bruce wants to add anything more to regards to that.
This is a fund that staff does rely on to fund numerous projects, one-off projects that come up, and we don't have a designated funding source, so It is an important fund for us to have available to us to make sure we can push projects through.
Chris?
So I guess staff, Diana or Bruce, or I guess I'm hearing not a lot of heartburn if we use the TIF funds for those two projects, but I'm hearing heartburn about using the PIR for this purpose. Is that, am I translating that?
I guess I don't know if I'd say heartburn, so to speak, but I guess when it's our true only fund that we have for the city as a whole in regards to the projects that are out there. And so, I mean, basically, we have TIF, and you're not able, there's nothing in TIF 14 to use. You can't use TIF 14 because it's not within the TIF 14 district. And so this is strictly our true capital fund that we have for roads.
Chris?
So I guess kind of a proposal and asking a little bit more here, but if I guess I've heard you want to kind of schedule these out, do them kind of one by one over a number of years, and I think I support that because that's going to save us all money and be able to use our internal staff. And it sounds like we have we have two projects that we have identified a source. So I'm liking where that part of this discussion is going until now we hit a wall. And how likely is there to be a future ability to...
And so that's where it's going to come into play in regards to the so-called internal loans that we have out there in paying back ourselves from TIF 14. I've just done the cash flow for TIF 14 based off of the increment where it's coming in today, because I can't guess what's coming in next year, even though we have some projects out there, because a lot of the projects out here have appealed their values, and the increment has gone down that we've collected. And so based off of when we initially did the so-called, like, what are we going to generate in this area, of course, the scope of the project has changed a lot in regards to when we first looked at it. There was going to be a lot more commercial. And so then we got hit with a lot of the appeal values. So as of right now, there's not enough within the TIF district itself, 14, to pay back our up to 2010 expenses. But again, I'm basing it off of the increment that is as of today. It does not take into place like the building across the street or any of the stuff that's currently being developed. And so since we got that special legislature, I want to look at all the funds that currently need to get paid back and move it over to the funds that, let's say we pay off TIF 1 and TIF 2 and I leave the pavement management projects on here for those few and pay off, leave enough for these two roads. What balance do I have left in this TIF that I can say, hey, I don't want TIF 14 to pay back TIF 1 and TIF 2. I want it to go to the PIR fund first. So that's all the stuff that I have to put together yet. And that's why it's part of then the budget discussion too. You need to factor that in too, that regards to the funds that we do have, do you want to use any of that? So I don't know if that helps answer your question at all.
It does. And I guess, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
The TIF 14 funds, that already is accounting for the splash pad that we've
The TIF 14 cannot be used. That is the park trust fund. You cannot use TIF dollars for park improvements, park-related improvements.
Okay, but didn't that pay back? Okay.
That's a different thing. Because you're talking about the reimbursement policy, and I'd like to have a discussion on that thing, too, at some point.
Sorry.
Okay. Dan.
Thank you. So, I agree. I mean, I do think we need to do it in increments. You know, kind of identify A and F as, you know, maybe A worse than F. But I think, you know, if we have dedicated funds for F and we have enough to cover it, if there's 500,000, it's going to be 280. I think we need to at least start with something. You know, I think we could start with that, you know, and if we can find the rest of the funds then to finish E and within the same, I think we were saying within the same, you know, TIF area, at least start with the one that, because we know we get a lot of complaints, we know it was one of the top two that we want to start anyways. You know, it's hard to get, you know, the grader out there on with Highway 10 and everything, that we have the money, we have the need identified as one of the top needs. We can at least say we'll start with something like that, and we'll build out then for the other ones as we find the funds and determine the funds, but with the general idea that we're going to try to do at least one a year, one to two a year, you know, as, you know, the funds are figured out. But I think it's a no-brainer if we have the dedicated TIF funds, and that's under, you know, they'd be completely covered by F, and we identified F as one of the worst ones, at least start that process.
Kirsten?
Chris, you said you wanted to do one every 2 to 3 years, right? Best practice.
So just for clarification, what I really don't want to do is jeopardize the pavement management program. It's we're seeing such good results from that out there. I don't want to jeopardize our ability to deliver those projects.
What number of these a year would jeopardize that? Or every 2 years?
So assuming the engineering staff requests are approved this year, I think we could probably fit one a year into our ability to, we could probably deliver one of these a year, maybe skip a year every third year or something, but I think we could do one, generally one a year or close to one a year.
Okay.
In-house.
And if the council would like to start with the TIF district, because we have money for that, where would you start?
I think, again, our priority was A, then F.
So I think we would prefer F over E.
Okay.
Just from the calls we get, and I agree. We don't like getting the grader out there is not easy on the highway. And the school buses, there's a big pothole. If you ever go out there and you're coming out onto the highway, on the right-hand side there where the buses start and they gun it, there's always a big pothole on the right-hand corner there. So that's always problematic.
So I think consensus for staff would be to start in the TIF district with F, then use the leftover money to start with E, and then do we have direction on A, B, C, and D when it comes to the PIRF fund?
I think we want to have the TIF 14 reimbursement policy discussion, and that will help paint the better picture on when we could afford the rest of them and everything of that nature. But
so consensus would be start with F and then E using the TIF funding we already have, and then we'll address A, B, C, and D after we have that conversation, Chris.
So, Diane, I know you haven't done the work, but when do you possibly think TIF 14 would be able to like free up some of this money? Is that, I mean, I'm not saying is it next year, but is it in 2 years? Is it in 10 years? Is it at the end of the life?
Well, when you talk about free up, that's why when you look at the bottom of these loan schedules, if you see them decreasing, those are getting transferred money into these different funds every year. So, for example, from TIF, I'm paying back for land because we're not going to generate enough in land sales to pay back our land. And so that's a big thing to get that off the books. So I've been doing like 200,000, and I think it will jump to 500,000, goes into a fund that it's called the HRA Revolving Fund. And so that is, you're going to actually see this because I'm going to bring it forward as part of the budget discussion, because that fund is currently holding land sales that we've done and then those transfers in regards to the land value, and then from 2000 prior 10 expenses. It's a lot to handle. There's a lot of internal loans going on, and so I didn't include the 2000 or the TIF 14. These are all the internal loans that are going right now, and then I have some land reimbursements and prior 2010 expenses up here. It's a lot, and this is just for 2010 earlier. I still have to do the after. And that, so we are, I can only send or disperse out to the other funds to the extent we get increment for the year. So we have to pay back the bond, of course, that we did bear the grading and that sort of thing. We did that as a bond. And then we are still have a TIF note on Flaherty and Collins, but residents at the core. And we paid off Affinity, and I think we still have one more. Maybe that is it in TIF 14. So those are the first things. Those are the ones that have to get paid, is the debt and any of the agreements that we have. And then it can be going out then to the other funds that we can pay back for 2010. So if we get $2 million in increment and I have to pay back, let's say, $600,000, I'm transferring $1.4 million to the other funds.
And we can choose how quickly we pay back whatever internal loan, correct?
Yes, we can decide which fund we pay back. So that was where I said, you know, I have it going to TIF 1 and TIF 2, which are more restrictive. It could be that, hey, I don't keep paying back TIF 1 and TIF 2. I want it to go to the PIR fund and that, and get that paid off earlier and see where it ends at the end, if there's increment enough left to keep paying back 1 and 2.
So when do you, like, kind of roughly, when do you think you'd be able to put more money in the PIR? I'm just trying to figure out if we were going to use for this, are we talking in like a foreseeable future?
I'll answer it differently. So each year we're collecting X number of dollars, and we have a smaller amount than that we have to send to a dedicated place, whether it be residents at the core or the bond.
that remaining balance, we have an ability to look at all of the ideal repayment amounts and shift that around and change it to, we think that this fund is the best one to, maybe we front load all of the extra increment each year into that because that's where we want it to go. And this fund back here, or this internal loan, we're okay if worst case scenario happens and we don't pay ourselves back on that. So that's what we want now that we got the special legislation approved this year. We want to bring forward the reimbursement policy or plan and reevaluate it with this council, knowing that, you know, we have waterfront park that we want to do, and can we get a little flexible with those funds? We have the gravel roads that we want to repay or pave, and we can repay the DIR fund a little faster maybe. You know, we can look at all of those scenarios and figure out what is the best plan of attack, what gets us the biggest bang for our buck. And so short, to make a long answer short, there's money there. It's just, do we want to make it a bigger amount each year, or are we happy with what it is? And what it is this cash balance projection, but it could go faster. Fair?
Yes. And so we only can, though, transfer to our funds to the extent that we get increment. It's not just everything at, like, the end of, like, the district is done in 2040. So I'm not going to transfer everything in 2040. It's going to be as it comes in.
So we have our own money envelopes, and we can decide which envelope we take from and put in.
But there is...
Yeah, to a degree.
But there is two different things. There is the payback from TIF 14... And then there's the land sale side of it, which is to do the reimbursement policy. So there is kind of two items out there.
Okay, so we can say go ahead with F and E and then bring A, B, C, D back after the reimbursement policy is reviewed. Is that copacetic? Does that jive?
It's not just the reimbursement. It's the payback of the expenses in the core area.
And that,
yes.
Okay.
And so, but what factors into there also is the budget discussion.
Yes.
So, yes.
But we can start. We can start with F and E, and then figure out A, B, and C, D after those discussions happen.
And final question, I think, is this next year, or is this a wait a year and do it in-house?
Shannon?
What's the benefit of waiting a year and doing it in-house?
About $30,000 on the low end. Money saved.
I'm going to go ahead and go with wait.
Right, the 10%. That's just area F.
Start now or wait?
Wait.
Start.
Yes?
Wait.
Okay. All right. Start with F.
2027.
Wait 1 year, start with F, go to E, come back with A, B, C, D after discussions. Wow, that was a good one.
So we will.
I also Googled real quick how many languages there were. There's 7,111, but I think there's 7,112 because we just added finance to a list of languages. That I'm not fluent in.
I'm so sorry, but there's a lot of numbers.
I appreciate it. Never doubt. Never doubt you know what you're talking about.
So we'll build this direction into some budget documents, some cash flows, and we'll start preparing a case to talk about the TIF 14 repayment plan, reimbursement plan, and generally start to gear up for a... Get rid of gravel roads beginning in 2027.
Be gravelless. All right. Moving on to item number two. Consider request for proposals. Civil legal services.
And then this little lock thing. If you put it on, it will change the screen when you flip the screen. If you don't have it, kind of close still.
All right.
So the city has a handful of contracts with what we call professional services.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Our civil and attorney being one of them. We started a contract with Fritz here back in November 1st, 2021.
We did do a two-year, his contract's run on a two-year cycle. We did renew that one time so far, with that one set to expire later this year, October 31st, 2025. Looking through our ordinance, it calls out a general time frame. I guess the ordinance is written more in a suggestive statement where city attorney should be about every 3 years, where some other professional services would be every 5 years. So Mr. Knopf's contract is sitting right in that window of at 4 years, between that 3 and 5 year mark. So it is recommended that, or I guess I, staff's recommending that we consider that RFP process. And then I did put in the case a kind of that general timeline that it would probably take to conduct an RFP, to have someone on, you know, have council give that consideration sometime in September, with a November 1st start date.
All right. Comments? We can, if we choose not to go RFP, we can extend, right?
Correct.
So the question is, do we extend or do we go out to RFP? Thoughts? Chris, and then Kirsten.
I just say there's no downside for an RFP. I mean, it doesn't mean we're unhappy with how things are, but just find out what else there is and what current prices are.
Okay. Kirsten?
Second.
I guess I'm very happy with it. I'm not opposed to an RFP. I mean, in general, it's fine, but I don't think it's necessary.
I'm good with getting bids.
I'm good with RFP.
I think we should try to shake them down and get a lot less. Don't let them know I said that, though. Oh, it's right there.
I think it goes with our stated goals of going out to RFP. I'm very satisfied, but I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, with one question before I put a period on that sentence. Staff time, what does that look like?
We've got, the last RFP. So we've got a decent framework to start. We would update that one ultimately. That would take a little bit of time. We would do a 3 week proposal period. Back in 2021, I'm not entirely sure, but they did 6 weeks. I don't know that a law firm would need more than 3 weeks to submit a proposal. So. And then I did shorten down also a staff review period after the proposals come in. Basically, we'll summarize what they say and probably conduct some reference checks, things of that nature. And then we'll have to establish likely a special council meeting to do interviews for it. I don't know how many firms to expect submitting proposals, but I would think that probably going to be around a handful. I think that's what we received last time. So overall, I don't think it's going to be a huge time commitment, but it'll be a quick process once those deadlines arrive.
And everyone voting for RFP, you're okay coming in for a special session?
Will there be food? I'm kidding.
No.
Should be a little less involved in the last one. The last one was like a Supreme Court hearing, if you remember. So. Okay. All right. We will go out to RFP, and I hope you win.
I don't think you get to complain about the last time.
No, I was a major part of it. I like.
I know.
I enjoyed it. Just to keep you ahead of that. All right. We have consensus on that one. Moving to the final item here. Looks like we made some time up discussion regarding the annual performance review of the city administrator and individual who is subject to the city council's authority may be closed to the public.
So this is my annual review. We would need a motion to go into a closed meeting, and then I'll have to stop the recording, restart it, and go through that process a few times. But should you choose to go into a closed meeting to do this, it would be subject to, or following Minnesota Statute 13D.05, Subdivision 3A, which is to go into closed session to
do an evaluation on an individual subject to council authority. So.
Looking for a motion to go into closed session.
Move to closed session.
I'll second.
Second. Motion second. We vote on this then? We vote on this, even though it's a work session, or we don't vote on this?
Yep, you need to
vote. All right, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstains? Motion carries. We're in closed session. Session is now closed.